Ooh, yeah, this is the Macho Man Randy Savage, and you're listening to the Rock Paper Podcast. Check it out at rockpaperpodcast.com. Yeah, dig it!
Hey, everybody, this is Chris Sear calling to you from the past, and we've destroyed the world. And if you found this, it's because you're listening to Rock Paper Podcast. Now get out there and restart civilization. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. This is Rock Paper Podcast with Shane and his guests. You will listen to what he says.
Tell me why.
It's nothing but a podcast.
Tell me why.
We're making this for your ass.
Tell me why.
All you gotta do is download Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, hanging out at the Drunken Fish in Westport Plaza with my good friend, our new friend. We're not. We'll
be good friends.
We're good friends.
Yeah.
We're still new friends. We're getting there.
New is good.
with Chris Sear.
Hello.
Hey. Welcome to the show, man.
Hey. Thank you. Thanks.
Chris was hosting the open mic night tonight.
I was with 300 comics.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it was interesting, man.
It was. Yeah, yeah. Anytime open mics are weird, man. Like anytime you get some of the newer guys, it gets really freaky, really fast.
Yeah. What was guy talking about getting having lots of sex because he's getting. That was a little weird.
I don't know, man. You could tell, like, with a first-timer sometimes, it's going to be about their sex life.
Yeah.
Or it's going to be really racist.
Sure.
And hopefully not both.
Right, yeah. It's funny, because, like, you can tell just some of those guys, like, what, people have, like, this, you know, image of what stand-up comedy is, or what, you know, what I'm supposed to do as a comedian.
Right.
I'm supposed to... You know, that there was a guy doing all kinds of voices and stuff like that, and like I don't know. I mean, it's like JR did a lot of voices,
yeah,
but did it right. You know, it's like I don't know. There's a
well, I mean, it's hard because they've got to learn. Not only do they have to be able to do the voices, but they've got to work them into a material.
Sure.
Yeah, like JR doesn't just start doing voices. He has a nice fluid way of getting them in there.
All right.
And the one guy tonight was just like, I'm going to do random voices one after the other.
Yeah.
With no logic or reason to it.
Maybe that voiceover talent scout's in the audience tonight, and I'm getting my neck.
That's got to be it.
Right.
Let me get as many voices as I can in case somebody needs a Rocky impersonator.
Right.
Cause, well, actually, Rocky's going to be relevant again.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That movie does look really good.
I can't wait for it. Yeah, totally.
I'm excited.
Now, when I first saw the trailer for that, I was like, oh, man. Like, they had me, because whoever designed that trailer knew, like, they knew a Rocky fan.
For sure.
They're like, hold on, we're going to flash, there's going to be some boxing, hold on, now we got some crying, now we got some crying, now we got an old lady crying, now here comes a roller coaster again. So we are at the Drunken Fish at Six Flags.
Right, yes.
We're just riding a Screaming Eagle, up and down.
Woo!
Oh man, we're almost at the top of the hill, Shane. Raise your hands. Oh, God. Here we go. Ah!
Oh, man.
It sounds exactly like the Mine Train to me.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man.
I haven't been down there. If anybody can hear me still.
At the Valley Park Funny Bone, there's a train track right behind the club. So that just reminds me of every time you get to a good part of your set.
Sure.
There's going to be a train coming. And you just got to work it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a... It's always funny because it's such a weird, always a weirdest moments, and you know, and like all of a sudden, like you're in the middle of the best part of your joke, like you
right.
Said. Like, it's just
I love watching different comics handle it differently, and the one that always hurts me is the guys at an open mic or just a comic at an open mic, and it happens to them, and they're like, "Oh, I'll just wait for the train to pass."
Yeah.
It's like, "No, you have 4 minutes.
Yeah.
You should probably keep going."
Your set.
Yes. Your set was you quietly waiting for a train. That is some deep comedy, man.
Yeah, right.
That is next level.
It's this character I'm working on. Yeah.
I just opened for Joe Marlatti here at the Westport Funny Bone a couple weeks ago, and I kept threatening him that my opening set was going to be 6 minutes of silence, followed by 4 minutes of me screaming. Yeah, maybe don't do that, because he didn't know me at all still,
right.
So... Yeah, but it's nice to scare your headliner. It keeps him on his toes.
Yeah.
That's what I've decided. But
Joe's been on the show, man. He's he's a lot of fun.
He's great. He could have handled it. If I had done something really ridiculous that he had to come back from, he could have done it.
Oh, like, yeah. Yeah, he's a professional comedian.
That's right. We had one night, it's Friday night. They do two shows, and we had a different feature every night that weekend for the most part. And at the Friday night show, the feature went ahead and did like 45 minutes.
Oh.
Which, you know, the feature is supposed to do 20, Joe will do an hour. And the guy just would not get off the stage.
Yeah.
It was awkward. I'm just in there like, am I supposed to do something here?
Yeah.
Or is this the club's problem?
Huh.
But luckily, everybody was funny.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's the later show on Friday, so it's a little looser at least, but... It was an interesting night.
Yeah.
But Joe handled it great. He is a professional comedian, man.
Yeah.
I got a lot of great advice from him, so I liked working with him.
Yeah.
He's fun.
Yeah, great guy.
He's one of the few comics who can play guitar, and I don't get aggravated that they have a guitar.
Yeah.
Because he's funny with it.
Yeah. There's a... I don't know. Like, talked about a little bit with other comics about the guitar comedians
mm-hmm.
or other... You know, various, niche performers, kind of like that. But, like, I feel like there's some of them that really do it well, and then there's some that just, you know, it's, like, you know, you look at a guy like Nick Thune, like, he plays guitar, but it has nothing to really do with the act. It's,
right.
It's more or less background music, you know, or, but I do like, I like guys like Stephen Lynch also that
mm-hmm.
do, you know, songs and stuff, and...
Yeah, I know it's controversial. Like,
yeah.
You ask a million different comics, like, what do they think of guys who do music
sure.
in their act, and you'll get a bunch of different answers.
Yeah.
If you're funny, I mean, do it.
Yeah.
It doesn't bother me. Shows I run, I'll put up people who play music as long as I think you're funny.
Yeah.
So.
J.R. Brow does some good guitar stuff, too.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he was at the open mic tonight.
Yeah.
So. Man, he's funny.
Oh, like, yeah.
I love him.
That was some good stuff. I haven't seen him in a while, so it was... It's fun to see him just for a couple minutes there, and
right.
He's at Westport this weekend, right?
I think so. He was because he was at Valley Park last week,
right?
So I think he's moving over to Westport this week. Yeah,
yeah.
So it's a good chance to see him.
Sure. Yeah, it's kind of a weird kind of thing, like you know, just to do both clubs in the back to back weekends. But I don't know. It's kind of nice, like also
right.
like because gives you like a second chance to catch somebody. So.
Yeah. No, that is great. Like. That's one good thing about the comics not minding doing both clubs
right.
is that, yeah, if I miss you here this week, maybe I'll see you in a couple weeks at the
sure.
other one. And
yeah.
Yeah, like, it's just nice and friendly.
Yeah. I went to, I ran up to Columbia last Thursday to see Chris Kattan.
Oh, yeah.
Josh Arnold and Sean O'Brien.
That looked like a fun show.
Yeah, it was a good time.
What does Chris Kattan do during his act? Like...
It's,
I don't see him as a stand-up.
Like. Yeah, he's not a stand-up at all. Like, it's more or less storytelling.
Okay.
And some of it was fun. Like, you could tell he's very uncomfortable up there.
Right.
It's about what I expected, though. Like, he's a theater, you know, guy. He's a performer. But, like, if you go in with... low expectations, you can only be,
surprised.
Yeah. So, but he did some stories about, like, the SNL 40 thing being there.
Okay.
And that was kind of fun, but you could tell, like, the first thing he did when he got on stage was he's, like, started doing the head bob. He's, like, I just gotta get this out of the way, because, you know, you can tell, like, everybody's gonna ask him about it. And
right.
So if he doesn't do it, and But yeah, I don't know if I would ever want to live that kind of life where like you're that, you know, recognizable, where people everywhere you go, every day of your life, people want to come up and ask you about, you know,
right,
Night of the Roxbury thing or whatever. Or
no, it's got to be rough.
Or whatever, you know, whatever their favorite character was. But
I mean, he's got to be interesting to watch from a storytelling perspective, I guess. Like, I'm sure he's got great Saturday Night Live stories.
Sure.
Because he was there for, like, my favorite years of Saturday Night Live. So that's great. But,
it was weird, though.
It's got to be a thing, like, where there's probably something he really wants to do, but he can't just because it's not what he's known for, like you said.
But Josh, I talked to him a little bit after the show, and he was saying that he worked with him, like, a year ago, and, like, that the show's a lot better now, though. Like, so
really?
maybe he's...
He's just got to develop it.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, I've seen those guys. Like, I've seen, like, Pauly Shore, who... Did not necessarily a stand-up, but he's been a comedian of sorts in movies. But he's been trying to develop more of a true stand-up act, and I've seen him come by and stuff. And
I saw Pauly Shore do stand-up in the 90s, I guess it was, like when he was first starting out, before he was a VJ, I guess.
Oh yeah.
He was interesting back then. Like that was still when you had characters.
Sure.
Like comics could be characters on stage before everybody just started talking about their therapy sessions for the most part. So he was interesting for the time.
Yeah. I saw him at Plush like 2 years ago or something.
Okay.
So with John Venegoni opening.
Yeah, that's right. So. I think I heard the story about that. That's fun.
Yeah, that was a weird night too, man. Pauly was like, he did pictures and signing and everything. But like it was like a sofa and he's like standing behind it. And I got my picture. It's me sitting on the sofa and Pauly standing behind me. So it just looks like Pauly Shore is like photobombing everybody's picture.
So you don't get too close to him?
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure what it was because I shook his hand. Like, it's not like.
Right, so he's not a germaphobe.
Yeah, it was just a weird thing. I don't know if he just didn't want people touching him too much or whatever. But
hey, man, the weasel likes his couch.
Man, the weasel.
Oh, man.
But no, I think with Chris, I mean, hopefully he finds where he, what
yeah.
it is. I don't know. I do like that. If he could just, like, get the stories more. I mean, I like that kind of stuff. I'd pay to see, listen to those stories. Like, they're fun stories. It's just a matter of getting the pacing down right and the.
Oh, yeah.
Segues and things.
And certain shows you go to, that's what you're going for. Like, I went and saw Kevin Smith, and it was 3 hours of Kevin Smith stories.
Yeah.
It's not stand-up.
Yeah.
But it was great.
Yeah, I was at the pageant recently?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a great show.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
What I loved most about that show was the guy in line, because we sat right next to one of the lines to the microphone.
Right.
Like, we were right by the microphone. And my favorite moment was the guy behind the last guy who got to ask a question.
Oh, right.
Like, it's mean, because it's totally just watching somebody get their heart broken.
Sure.
But that guy's face, when he realized that's the end of the show, and he was right there, so close to the mic, it just crushed every dream he had. And
right.
It was like, And then, like, I told my wife I felt bad for him. My wife's like, he was probably just going to say something stupid.
Yeah, it felt like everybody asked about podcasting.
They
like,
did. It turned into a podcasting symposium.
Right. The podcasting is definitely fun.
Uh-huh.
But for a guy who's got a whole catalog full of great movies, and everybody wants to just talk about his podcast, so it's kind of interesting. But
that's his thing now, though.
Yeah.
Like,
I did. I do talk about that moment a lot, though, like in reference to my show, because he really opened my eyes to a lot of stuff. Like the moment when he was saying how, he like encouraged everybody to do a podcast.
Yep.
He was like, it's free. You can say whatever you want. He was like, nobody's controlling it right now. So
right.
And do it while you can until somebody tells you you can't.
I hated him for that.
Yeah.
When you're looking for a podcast to listen to, anytime you've got to go through 900 podcasts,
it's
Kevin Smith's fault. Everyone should write him a letter.
Sure.
But I get what you're saying. No, totally.
What I liked what he was saying about it, because like he was saying how like he records with his mom a lot, and the whole thing about like that when the memory starts to slip, that the first thing to go is the sound of somebody's voice, and like, and he has all these conversations recorded and things, and like, and that really touched me. Like, I was like, you know, like it was, and I take it to my show. Like, I try to just record as much as I can with my buddies and my, you know, and have these conversations preserved. I mean,
right.
It might not necessarily be something great for everybody to listen to, but it's fun for me and like to have all these things.
And someday you'll be flipping through a hard drive or something, and you'll just catch a conversation you completely forgot about. My grandma recorded everything that happened in her house on audio cassette for like a 20-year period. And she would never tell people. Like, we all found out afterwards, like, what was going on. So you always had to wonder if Grandma was recording us, like, the Nixon tapes or something.
Right.
But she would put these little tape recorders in every room during a family function and just press record and walk away. And then she went back and cataloged all the tapes. So, like, and when you visit her, she'll bring out something of me when I was, like, 12.
Yeah.
And it's just some conversation I didn't even know was being recorded. And she's like, wait till you get to the part where you say something really dirty. Like, thanks, Grandma. My grandma's cool. Like, I do jokes about her, but she's like, she's religious to a degree, but she's like the kind of religious person that doesn't bug you about your own beliefs or anything.
Yeah.
And so she appreciates when she hears something really off color that wasn't meant for her. So I know what you mean, though, because we listen to it and like, we've had relatives pass, and you'll be listening to that tape, and all of a sudden, there's their voice, and you weren't expecting it. It's like, wow, that's really weird.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, just for me, like, I look at it like if, and not that I, you know, I don't have children or anything, but, like, if the day comes, I have children, and, like, the show's around, and for whatever reason, I'm not here, like, they could always have these shows to listen to get to know me more, or whatever it is, you know. It's like that kind of stuff. Like, just to think of, you know, it's just cool to know that these will always be there, and you know, this audio will live on and stuff. So regardless if I'm here or not or whatever it is, and I just had a moment a little bit ago. A friend of mine from the show we recorded a while back, and he passed in his sleep a little bit ago, you know, it was a real bummer, but I shared the episode again. I said, you know, let's celebrate his life and remember this when we listen to some of these stories of, you know, I was thankful I got to share some of the stories.
Yeah.
I was like, listen to this and laugh with us and have a good time and you know, not be as sad. I mean, it's tough, but it's, you know.
Yeah.
So.
It's good to have that memory, man.
Yeah,
that's really good.
So, anyway, bringing this interview down.
So the moral is record everything everybody does around you, and then go back and listen to it later.
I mean, the government's already doing it anyway.
They really are. You don't think smartphone technology is advancing all that just so you can have it?
Right.
Nah, they're listening to you right now.
Yeah.
That's what they're doing. It's all Donald Trump. All Donald Trump right now.
Yeah.
He's funding.
Somebody just shared a thing. I don't, you know. I tease my dad a lot. Like, anytime he shares something on Facebook, like, you know, it would just be like a picture of Obama with, you know, some quote next to it. I'm like, oh, it's a picture with words on it. It's got to be true. You know, it's like, you know, that kind of stuff.
Oh, but
it was a picture of Shia LaBeouf, and he was, or whatever, he was talking, like, it was a quote from being on The Tonight Show talking about that Eagle Eye movie. And it was a quote, like, saying something about how, you know, he knew that there was things being recorded and stuff, but like he didn't really believe it was to the extent or something like that. But he, like, on the set of the movie that he met somebody like FBI or whatever it was, and a guy like was like pulled up a conversation that he had like 2 years before or something like that and played it for him, like, or something.
Yeek.
I don't know, something along those lines. I don't know how accurate or anything or whatever it was.
Right.
I didn't pull up the Tonight Show clip and see, but just like that, you know, like, it's, you know, it's kind of scary to think about.
I used to be into conspiracy theories really hard when I was younger. It's like, any of them, like, if it had to do with the Illuminati or any of that, I was into it.
Yeah.
I was like, sure, why not? And I don't know. I don't think I ever actually believed any of it.
Right.
But my favorite thing about conspiracy theories is they make sense.
Yeah.
Like, the best conspiracy theory is just any, like, you can, it makes sense. And the moment it doesn't make sense, it's just because that's what they want you to think.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Like it's an in what is it? Incontrovertible. Sure. Like you cannot argue with them at all. And I loved it. Like, yeah. Oh man, people, the Kennedy assassination, all the way up to the 9/11, like cracked me up. Did
you just you're right. Okay. No, it's just screen sleeping. Goes okay. Sleep. Yeah.
All those people cracked me up growing up. Like, yeah. I had a friend who believed that public transportation in St. Louis was bad because the richest people in St. Louis wanted the poorer people to die. And during the winter, people would catch more colds while they waited for buses. And those colds, since they didn't have good health care, they would die from the colds they caught waiting for the buses. So that's why public transportation in St. Louis never improved.
Yeah.
And you listen to that, you're like, holy shit, that makes sense. I cussed on your show, sorry.
Oh, that's it.
It's like, that makes sense. That makes a lot. It's totally crazy and completely untrue, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Maybe. But you're listening to that does make sense. Like, right. If I was rich and I wanted to kill the poor people without actually killing the poor people,
yeah.
I would just make them stand in the cold and the rain more.
Right. So. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah, that's all.
And now, yeah, with the internet, you just throw it on a picture.
Sure.
Just, oh, man, it doesn't even matter. But it also works the opposite way where people say things and there's total proof they said it, but then you just throw something up that says, oh, that person never said it. And that, if depending on which side you believe,
sure,
you're with. Like,
yeah, it's, I mean, it's...
Yeah,
people share all kinds of, especially with the power of Facebook and everything else.
Yeah.
People share everything like it's fact, and it's like... But it's, we're at that point, though, man. It's so hard to tell what is any, if any of it's real.
Oh, yeah.
Regardless of,
So, we have gone way beyond just needing Snopes to verify things for us. Like, I remember when Snopes was just the coolest thing in the world because it shut so many people up until somebody once said, oh, wait, what if Snopes is part of the liberal conspiracy?
That's what I'm saying. Right. I don't know. And everybody thinks, like, Wikipedia is fact, and it's like, I can go in Wikipedia and make a change,
Stephen Colbert breaking Wikipedia, when it came to, elephants the one time? That was brilliant. Him just showing you how you can't trust anything on Wikipedia, really.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. It's crazy, man.
It's the world we live in, man. Facebook's the worst thing in the world. I'm on it too much. I get aggravated by it too much.
Yeah.
I can't resist fighting on it sometimes. And then I just got to back up. Anytime I get too involved in a Facebook fight, I throw in random H.P. Lovecraft quotes now. It's like, it calms me down, it diffuses the situation, and it tells me I can move on.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, I don't know that person. I don't care about them.
Right.
Like, if it's somebody on my friends list, nobody on my friends list, I think I would actually have a serious fight with like that.
Yeah.
So, like, I kind of cultivate it. But, oh, man, I hate election season, so it's just going to get worse.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. I've been more and more, I mean, I post a lot, but I don't scroll and read as much.
Yeah. That's the trick. I need to do that.
Yeah. Because I share a lot just to promote, this show right. And other people's shows and various things. But like, I try not to sit there and just read the garbage that's on there. But
there's a lot of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like my favorite thing over the weekend, this past weekend, was the Donald Trump pinata on Cherokee.
Oh, yeah.
One of the businesses on Cherokee made a Donald Trump pinata since Cherokee in St. Louis is a lot of Hispanic businesses, and Trump said some things. And so they're like, whatever, we'll make a pinata. And then I'm reading the comments are just my favorite thing in the world.
Yeah.
Because, oh my God, people are vicious on there. And I know I sound like an old man complaining about Facebook now. But
YouTube comments are hilarious.
Too. Yeah, totally.
Just the people trolling everything. Like, it's, there was that video, speaking of trolling, that video going around and everybody bit real hard on it, thinking it was all that. That girl, saying stuff about people need to speak American and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, and everybody was like, this girl's, just going off on it. But it was just making me crack up. I'm like, you guys all just got played. Like,
right.
You know.
Totally just trolled.
Yeah.
But it's that rule, though. It's what is it? Poe's Law. It's like, you can't tell anymore who's trolling you or who seriously believes what they believe.
Yeah.
Like, I still believe you know, certain politicians are basically just punking us.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way this person believes all the things they say.
Right.
This is Brewster's Millions going on here, right? Live action Brewster's Millions. So, it is. It's weird, because in comedy the same way, you can never tell who actually believes some of the things they say.
Sure.
Goes back to, like, what I was talking about open mics earlier, like, new people who get on stage, you always know it's going to be about their sex lives or it's going to be something horribly racist that they're going to say that they don't believe, but they think they're being ironic.
Yeah.
And a lot of people just don't understand. Sometimes you can't tell the difference between an actual racist and someone's pretending to be racist.
Right.
And that video proved it. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
The fact is, like, she totally thought she was doing a character. But there are people like that.
Sure.
And it's not even an over-the-top characterization.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Like, oh, man. There are still people who want Obama's birth certificate.
Yeah.
And that was, what, 8 years ago now?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Come on. Let's get over it. Let's move on.
Yeah.
That got really political really fast. I'm sorry.
All right, man.
It's almost November.
Yeah. It's going to only get worse.
That's right. Every November.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned your grandmother and stuff.
Yeah.
I figured, you know, maybe tell us a little bit about where you started and stuff. And
sure. Like when my mom met my dad.
Well, I don't know. However far back you want to go, but yeah.
Long ago.
Yeah. I just.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, and like how, you know, what pushed you into wanting to do comedy and things and.
Well, I'm from St. Louis. Like,
yeah.
I grew up on the South Side pretty much my whole life. I was born in the county, but I don't tell people that. So anybody who hears that can keep that a secret.
Yeah.
But no, I was raised in South St. Louis, and my folks were poor, and you know they both worked for the state, which means they got paid once a month. So they both worked, which meant me and my brothers were left alone a lot.
All right.
So it made us creative with our time.
Sure.
And so I was always writing and got into theater a little bit. And then in school, I usually did whatever extracurricular got me out of gym or recess.
Yeah.
Like, it was fun. If it wasn't football, I wasn't interested in it
right.
in school at all. So as far as, like, the athletic stuff goes. So it's like, yeah, so I did mock trial and student newspaper and then the lit and then music and show choir and things like that.
Okay.
So if you could do it and it let you be a little creative, I was into it.
Yeah.
And
it's pretty similar for me. I did through school my freshman year I was involved in football, basketball, and track. And then started having knee problems, and my parents divorced, and my sophomore year I started working and stuff. But like, and then I still got really like involved. By my senior year, I started writing for school paper, and then I was also in FBLA and DECA.
Uh-huh.
And stuff. I was involved in all that, so it's like I got really involved in all the extracurricular stuff. And same after I gave up sports and things. So
yeah, it was easier than sports. I was like,
yeah.
Oh, this is just as much fun. Use
right.
of my time. So yeah, in college, when I went to college originally, I worked too much to do anything really fun.
Right.
So once I dropped out of college the first time, it was much easier. I eventually went back, but. I worked in fundraising for a long time for a large nonprofit, and that let me do all kinds of goofy things because you had to come up with creative ways to ask people for money.
Yeah.
And it also taught me like how to have fun and be professional at the same time. So after I went back to school and finished my degree, I was like, I'm going to start doing more creative things.
Yeah.
So I just wrote more, and I got involved in local theater, and I wrote plays that were comedy.
Okay.
I had a couple performed overseas as part of different festivals.
Oh, nice.
And one day, I was sitting around, and I was like, you know, the one thing I've always wanted to do that I haven't done yet is stand-up. My half-brother was doing sketch at the time, and I had went and I had seen one of his sketch shows, and it was really good, and a little bit after that, I had just finished Kevin Smith's book, to plug Kevin Smith some more, why not? I just finished his book, Tough Shit,
yeah.
And there's a whole chapter in there about when he decided he was going to make films. He just said, well, I'm a filmmaker.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, well, I'm a comic. So I went to an open mic. I got on stage. I did 6 minutes. What was supposed to be a 4-minute set. All 6 minutes were about my mom talking dirty to me. It was horrible. Yeah. It was horrible. It's a good story. It's terrible jokes. And I got off stage. I was like, I'm going to do that again.
Yeah.
And then that's it. That was two and a half years ago now.
Yeah.
I lose track of time.
So do you remember the first joke? Then?
I do. Because it's a story I tell all the time that my mom hates.
Yeah.
I'll tell you.
Yeah.
So when I was... My mom hates that I do this. So I am not going to ask my mom to listen to this. So, Mom, you could check out now. I know I posted this on my Facebook page that it was safe to listen to. Maybe I'll warn you. So... My parents, for a brief period of time, like when we were young, I say brief, but it was probably like 10 years or so, were really religious. Like, my grandma always taught us about church and God and stuff, but we started going to evangelical church. And, like, over the course of that, like, there were different things we were supposed to and not supposed to do, like a whole thing about being in the world and stuff. What's up, man? So it was really weird. But, like, you can't see this, but there are middle fingers on the microphone.
Yeah.
Where was I?
See you, Chris.
See you later, man.
See
you. Okay, so we grew up religious, and which meant there were different things about, like, sex and stuff that you were supposed to and not supposed to do and not supposed to know. So, like, all that's to set up the fact that it was, like, kind of puritanical in how things were handled. So... That should just give you the... That's for no reason other than to give you the mindset of my parents did not say certain things ever.
Right.
Like, at this point in my life. Well, for my 14th or 15th birthday, I can't remember which, my mom had given me a phone for Christmas. And this was back in the day, like, you know, when I say a phone, I mean a plugged into the wall in your bedroom phone. Like, there were no cell phones yet. So this was a big deal because every conversation until then you had to have in the family room. So you had no privacy whatsoever.
Right.
So I got my own phone line in my bedroom. And when she gave it to me, she told me, hey, I just want you to know, you cannot dial 900 numbers on this phone. And I don't know if they still have 900 numbers. Back then, they were, you know, that's what you called to have phone sex.
Right.
And it was like $5 a minute or whatever. So I didn't know why my mom told me this. I thought that was a weird thing to just mention out of the blue. But whatever, didn't think anything of it. I came home one night, and I was in my room. I was bored, and I had a Riverfront Times. And the back pages of the Riverfront Times used to be, I don't know if it still is, but it used to be nothing but sex lines.
Right.
Like 1-900, whatever. And I remembered my mom telling me I couldn't dial these numbers. And I was very distrustful of that at that moment for some reason. I was like, I'm just going to try it. Whatever. I just want to see if mom lied to me.
Yeah.
So I picked the first one. I dialed it, and it rang, and I was mad. Like, I was mad that she lied to me, so I held on to the phone. I was like, well, let's see what it is. I didn't think I could do this. And they pick up, and, you know, it's always the first minute's free. Every minute after is $4.95. And so for the first minute, I'm listening, and all it is it's a woman going, hey, baby, in 1 minute, I'm going to tell you some great things. So just hold on for 45 more seconds, because in 30 seconds, this is going to get really hot. And then in 10, and I hung up, because I don't want to get charged.
Yeah.
And like, boring, but I wonder why mom lied. Maybe they get better. So I called the next one, and same thing, like, it's... Get to the first minute, and it's just constantly like, we're going to tell you some really great stuff in a minute.
Yeah.
And I hung up. Like, I kept wanting to not get charged anything, but I wanted to hear a woman say something dirty. So at this point, I was determined. So I dialed through every single number in that Riverfront Times, just 90 of them probably, like just every single number in there.
Yeah.
And each time it was the same thing. I listened for the first minute, I hung up. Never heard a single dirty thing. Like, it was just breathy women telling me to hold on for another minute and everything. So, at the end of it, I was like, I don't know why mom lied. That wasn't that exciting anyway. Moved on with my life.
Yeah.
And a couple weeks later, my mom picked me up from school. And she starts driving, and she pulls over to the side of the road, and she just sits there quietly. And I know something's up, but I have no idea. So then she lights a cigarette. And my mom hasn't smoked for, like, you know, 5 or 6 years at this point. And so I know whatever I did was really bad and was really being trouble. So I can't think of it. And, like, I have some books in my room, maybe. Like, maybe she cleaned my room. I don't know. Yeah. And she looks at me and she goes, "Chris, do you love Jesus?" Which is not a good question to have somebody ask you. That is a terrible question to have your mom ask you while she's pulled over on the side of the road smoking.
Right.
And I looked at her and I go, "Well, yeah, of course I love Jesus, because that's the only answer I can give to that question." And she goes, "Well, if you love Jesus, why do you do the things you do?" And that is, like, such an open-ended question. Like, right. I have no idea what she thinks I did. I know what I think I did. And, like, all this stuff, I can't figure out what's going on at all. And finally I'm like, "Mom, I don't know what you're talking about. I love God. I love, you know, I love Christ." And she goes, "If you love Jesus, then what's this?" And she slaps this page on the dashboard of the car. And the car at the time is like a 79 Ford LTD. So it's got a big dashboard. Yeah. So she just lays this thing off on the dashboard. And it's a phone bill for like $300.
Oh.
And it's because I do not hang up the phone as fast as I think I hang up. So each of those lines had charged us somewhere between like $5 to $10 to $15 each.
Yeah.
And she looks at that and she's like, "Why would you call all these numbers?" And I was like, "Mom, you told me they wouldn't work." I was curious. And she just gets angrier. She's like, "Is that what you want women to say to you? Is that what you think of women? Is that how you think they are?" And I'm like, "No, Mom, I was curious." And then she looks at me and she goes, "Because I can talk to you like that and it won't cost us $300. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, "No, Mom, that's not what I want at all. Please don't. I don't know why I did it. I was just curious." And then my mom just looks at me and she's like, "Chris, oh, I'm so wet for you right now." And then she says, like, just the grossest things. Like, there's the where's the roller coaster? No, there's the roller coaster again. Rolling. Rolling, roll high. Like, "Yeah, keep those rods in those puppies rolling, roll high. Pat them up, shoot them up, hooing." You just feel that in you, don't you? Like,
yeah.
You can feel it way up in your gut. That's great. Alright.
And we're back.
So, yeah, so what my mom actually said is so vulgar, I'm not going to say it into the microphone.
Yeah.
But it was along the lines of, "I'm so wet for you." And then, seriously, for 20 minutes after, she said stuff that would get her sailors. Like, she said stuff that if she had told my dad more often, they probably would still be married. I don't know. I don't know why they got a divorce. That's probably not why. But it was impressive.
Right.
And she stopped at some point, and I was just almost in blackout in tears and fright from the thing she was saying. And she stopped and she goes, "I want you to think about that, about how you treat women from now on." And then she just drove me home. And I am seriously in tears the whole way. We get home, we go in the house, and my dad looks at me and goes, "Did your mom talk to you?" I was like, "Yes." And my dad's just like, "All right, well, don't do it again." And that was his talk. So I don't know if maybe they had planned on what she was going to do. Like, maybe that was the how you get a kid to stop smoking by giving them a whole pack of cigarettes.
That's exactly what I was thinking, yeah.
But, oh, it scarred me for a long time. Like, to this day, I can't talk dirty. Like, I am not good at it. Don't expect me to.
Yeah.
I could write you some dirty things because you can't see me sneezing and crying while I do it. But anytime I have to talk dirty, I'm going to start sneezing. It is an allergic reaction. And so, thanks, Mom.
Yeah.
That part worked. But that's the first joke I told on stage, and it was even longer than that when I told it. And it got a good response, but it was totally over, and like there's like long drags. But when I was done, I was like, I'm going to do this again.
Yeah.
And I have a two-minute version of that joke somewhere that I don't tell on stage because it's much dirtier than anything else I tell. But, yeah, it was a scarring thing. But it also, like, that's one of the stories that I would tell when I was in college that I realized, oh, I could do storytelling. and then storytelling turned into comedy.
Yeah.
So, and then after I'd seen my brother's sketch show and what he was doing, I was jealous a little. I was like, that looks like a lot of fun. And, you know, the only way to get out and do it is to just do it. Like, stop making excuses. So one night, I didn't tell any of my friends. The Heavy Anchor has an open mic. And Chad Wallace had just started doing it. Like, just started running it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm just going to sneak away. I'm going to go do this open mic. And then I'll sneak back home.
Yeah.
And not tell anybody. And I had a fun time. So I started going back.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I hear that quite a bit, that it's, quite addicting. Like, you know, that the first thing, I mean, even if you totally bomb and,
Here we go.
We
chose poorly.
Yeah.
Totally our train.
At least he stacked the barrels of sand. So
yes.
Only one instead of two.
That was good. Bless his soul.
But yeah, I hear quite a bit of people, like, you know, they say they, then once they go up, and even if it's awful, they're hooked.
Yeah.
It's like it's
Even if it's awful, if you made somebody laugh once,
right,
like that one laugh you got is just, that's the spot. It's like, oh,
yeah.
I didn't even know I had that itch.
Sure.
What was that?
So but, were you ever the funny kid in class or any of that stuff? Or
I was the loud kid in class,
yeah.
So I was occasionally funny just by default.
Right.
But, I mean, I was an obnoxious student in class. Like, I wouldn't have wanted to teach me. I constantly talked back to teachers. The worst was if I thought I was smarter than a teacher, and I usually did. I wouldn't let them teach me anything. I would constantly let them know I was smarter, so I would be kicked out of class. I once got kicked out of class and had to convince a vice principal that I was crying because if I didn't prove that the teacher who kicked me out of the class was in the wrong, I probably would have been suspended because I had been kicked out of her class so many times.
Huh.
The teacher was stupid,
yeah.
So that, totally. No, I have so much more respect for my teachers now as an adult, and I realize how horrible of a kid I was.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I was also, like, in my younger days, I was the loudest guy at the party. Like, it goes back to, like, the guitar comedy thing. I played guitar, and, like, we would have jam sessions, and all the songs I did would be ridiculous parodies of other songs. Like, it was really hard to get me to seriously sit down and play music. And it's just because that's how I was taught to relate to people.
Right.
So, yeah, like, growing up, it was either laugh or fight, and I did both a lot.
Yeah.
I enjoyed laughing more. So.
Sure.
I had two younger brothers, so there was a lot of fighting.
Yeah, I was going to ask also, you said your brothers. I was wondering how you fell in the...
So I have... My biological father has 6 kids, and I'm the oldest there. And my mom and my dad, my stepdad, have 2 other kids who I grew up with, so I'm the oldest there, too.
Yeah.
So no matter what, I was always the oldest.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, growing up with the two younger brothers I grew up with, constantly fighting because favorite sentence in the world was, my brother will kick your ass. And usually I just wanted to read a book and chill out.
Yeah.
And then all these neighborhood kids would come around saying, oh, we're going to fight. I'm like, why?
Right.
One good thing about, like, the three brothers in a house, like me and 2 brothers, one good thing about that is it was always 2 against 1, no matter what was happening. Like, 2 of us would be against one of the other. And, like, our youngest brother had it so hard, we would lock him in closets or hang him off a balcony. And there's no good reason.
Yeah.
Like, we were just jerks.
Right.
And, a poor kid. But then he'd always get you back somehow. Like, he'd make up some story, tell it to the parents, and we'd both get punished. Or the two of them would start throwing things at me for no reason. Who knows why?
Yeah.
I probably deserved it. But, yeah, it was always 2-on-1, so it taught you to fight dirty.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Well, we better plug your show.
Yeah.
Let everybody know why you're here, man.
So,
besides for the roller coaster rides and
talking about my mom. Well, I have 2 shows. One is a weekly open mic in Maplewood at the Crow's Nest that I co-host with JC Sabal. It's called Wild Card Comedy. It's fun. It's an open mic, but it also has a drinking game attached to it. And the drinking game, like, we call it a drinking game, but it's really, it adds an element of improv to the comic sets. We have a deck of cards, and we come up with challenges that will rotate in and out weekly that each card represents, like the Circle of Death drinking game.
Okay.
Comic draws a card. They got to do whatever challenge. So some of the challenges are like, do a clean set. And if you do a clean set, we'll buy you a drink. Some of the challenges are like, do five puns or do three puns during your set.
Yeah.
Things like that. And they're fun. And it mixes it up for the audience who, if you've come back and you've seen a comic before, like, when you see comics at open mics, like, which is why comics don't often tell people to come out to open mics, you'll see them working on the same joke and over. And if you're in the audience, like, stuff like this breaks it up a little. And also, I think comics like it because it gets you thinking about things a little differently. It gives you, like, a tag you'd never thought about sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And it's fun. So that's every Wednesday night at 10:30. And then I host a monthly show that I put together at the Crack Fox downtown called Impolite Company. And I bill it as a comedy show for adult persons.
Yeah.
Because it's just one of those things where a lot of comics complain about audiences being easily offended by material. And I was like, well, what if you had a place where the audience knew they were going to be offended? And that's what it is. I warn the audience that somebody might be offended by something someone will say. And generally the contract is, if they say something that's offensive and not funny, don't laugh.
Yeah.
Because nothing hurts a comic more than a bunch of people not laughing at what they said.
Right.
If it's funny, laugh. But that's the extent of the audience involvement in the show. Like, don't stand up and yell at the comics. Don't do anything like that. Like,
yeah.
It's a... I hate the word safe space, but it is. It's kind of a safe space to talk about religion and politics and sex.
Yeah.
And, like, all these topics where you're supposed to avoid if you're in polite company,
yeah.
Which is why we're impolite company.
Right.
But I got the idea in Chicago because the Laugh Factory has the Nasty Show every week, which is it's a late-night show where comics can do blue material that they're not really allowed to do in a club the rest of the time.
Yeah.
And I thought it was great. Like, but I always also tell the comics, like, they're not required to do dirty material, but if they want to, go for it. And most people, like, they embrace it, like, and I not just dirty material, but also, like I said, the politics mm-hmm. and just things you can't get away with.
Yeah.
If you're afraid the audience is going to tweet about you.
Sure, yeah. That's the thing. Like, you know, you look at guys... I don't know. I just... I don't get why, like... like, a guy like Louis C.K., you know, like, where he's made a career off of all those things he said, and then, like, he goes on SNL and says one joke...
Yeah,
and then everybody gets all bent out of shit, you know.
Do you not know who he is?
Right. I mean, granted, it's not the best joke, but the thing is, the people how bent out of shape they got about it. But it's like, but you know, he said, you know, his whole career he's been pushing the issues
right.
and stuff. You know.
So. Yeah. Yeah, and I'm careful, so I book comics who I know will be interesting.
Right.
Like, I try to book comics who I know will be interesting. And also hit those controversial topics. But I don't book comics who I think are just going to flat out be assholes for no reason.
Right.
Like, I don't need somebody who's just going to dive in and tear up the audience. And because I think that's the other side of the contract, is my audience is trusting me, like, to put together a show that, yeah, there's going to be controversial material maybe, but I'm not doing it just to push their buttons.
Right.
Like, there's something behind it. And the something behind it is I want them to laugh.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a fine line. Like, I totally understand why some people get upset at things comics say on stage, but I'm also of the opinion that during the show, the response to that is to not laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I wanted to put together a show. And I knew the owner of the Crack Fox really well, and I mentioned to her that I wanted to do this show. And I don't know if you know the Crack Fox, if you've been to it. The Crack Fox is a metal karaoke goth industrial bar that does fetish nights.
Oh, yeah.
And they do rock shows now, too, and comedy.
Oh, yeah.
That's in downtown St. Louis. So when you go in, it's a Like, if you're there on a night just to hang out, it's a dark bar. They've got a lot of art on the walls that is not PG rated, but they also have the Ed 209 from RoboCop painted on the other wall. So it's a bar for everyone. Like, if you're into fetish or if you're into sci-fi, it's there, and it just seemed like a good fit for the show.
It kind of reminded me. I went to see Stryker show at Shameless Grounds,
yes,
too, and then you got like vagina molds all over the walls and stuff like that. And
yeah, I always describe it like Crack Fox is Shameless Grounds after dark.
Yeah, right.
I love Shameless Grounds. That's another place that's, you know, it's super sex positive, and Crack Fox has a lot of that same atmosphere to it.
Yeah.
In fact, you'll see a lot of people from Shameless at Crack Fox.
It's interesting how you can pretty much make anything a comedy room.
Yeah. Well, so luckily Crack Fox has a stage because it's made for loud thumping shows.
Yeah.
So like the challenge for us is to make it inviting for comedy because there's a huge mosh pit in the front of the room no one wants to sit in ever.
Yeah.
So luckily all the comics and the audience have all been on board for everything that we've done there.
Yeah.
So it's always worked out to a good dynamic.
Nice.
So it's been a lot of fun. I enjoy it.
Yeah.
We do it on the third Friday of every month. In September, we moved it to September 11th because they had a scheduling issue, and it just happened to be on September 11th.
Yeah.
That wasn't on purpose, but once it was, I was like, well,
sure,
we got to mention it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So the next one is October 16th. It'll be a fun time.
Yeah. Yeah, October 16th, Crack Fox. You got JC, you mentioned earlier,
mm-hmm.
Tim Convey, Stryker Spurlock, both friends of the show. And Christian Lawrence and Aaron Sawyer.
Yeah, Aaron Sawyer, you might have seen him tonight at the open mic downstairs. He's a pretty funny guy. He and Stryker host an open mic in Soulard, the Great Grizzly Bear.
Okay.
So that's where those two are from. And Christian Lawrence is from Bare Knuckle Comedy Local.
Yeah.
So it should be a good time.
Yeah.
And John Vinigoni is going to co-host.
Oh, nice.
Or not co-host, guest host. Because sometimes I like to drink at my show and not run up and down on stage. And he was at the last show and just tore it up. Like, he just chewed the boards. Like, he was good. And the crowd loved him. So I'm like, we'll bring him back.
I just recorded with John last night.
I saw that.
That guy kills me, man. He's so funny.
Oh, he's not just funny. He is one of the most legitimately nice people in St. Louis comedy you'll meet. Like, he's super supportive of new people, and like, without being falsely so, because there are a lot of people who will give you compliments, but at the same time they twist a knife in the back. He is not one of those at all. I love John. He's a great guy.
Yeah, sure.
So that's my plug for John Vinigoni.
Yeah.
If you are looking for someone to host anything,
right?
Yeah, hire me.
He was. John was throwing it out there on that show. That, you know, he's like that he's unemployed, so he's looking for
there
anything.
You go.
So
I would hire him to host anything.
Yeah.
He's good with people. Like, in fact, like, that's the other thing is most of my crowd, like, I've been lucky with all the comics being friendly to the crowd after the show, too. But a lot of the crowd from the night that John was on the show were just like, he's so super nice. He talked to anybody who walked up to him.
Yeah.
Like, good. What's the other response, though?
Right.
I don't want to meet the comic who won't talk to people when they walk up.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he's so legitimately nice. So I'll stop gushing on him now. I don't want him to think I'm trying to marry him. But I would.
Yeah.
I mean, if we were both single, I would.
Seriously,
marry him,
though. But John, if you're in.
Yeah, totally. If you're into it, man.
He is a very pretty man with his golden,
oh my God,
golden
right?
locks.
Totally. I want him to shave his head. I just want to come in one day and just see him completely shaven.
Yeah.
Just be like, this is me now. And I think it'll be great. And it's like a darker, bizarro John who's just always smoking clove cigarettes and talking in French.
Yeah.
I think this would be good.
Yeah.
I think that should be his new act.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why I came up with all that. I'm very weird. Like, I had thought about that before. I hadn't much.
So, anything else coming up besides What's two shows to look out for?
Let's see. When will this be up?
I don't know.
The 19th of September.
Yeah.
I'm on picnic time, so if this is after the 19th of September, you can time travel back to that.
All right.
And then...
That's an art bar, right?
It's an art bar. It's in the back room of Art Bar, which is interesting because I had a friend post that they're having a wizard birthday party at Art Bar that night. I'm like, oh, that's going to be two interesting things going on at the same time. So we'll see. It might turn into a wizard comedy show. Who knows?
Hope so.
But I like Justin and Andrew, and they're good people, so I'm going to enjoy being on that show.
Yeah.
And then, I have a show October 5th with the Drunken Nerdy Guild, I guess. They're going to do some kind of arguing for pros and cons of certain superheroes. I have no idea.
Huh.
They asked if I wanted to defend superheroes on stage. I was like, sure.
Yeah.
Because Archon in Illinois is that same weekend. It's a big sci-fi con, and I'm going to be there all weekend.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'll be at Archon with Zombie Squad. So if anybody is milling around Archon and wants to learn how to survive a zombie apocalypse, we'll be presenting a zombie apocalypse seminar there.
All
right. I'm much busier than I thought I was.
Yeah.
Because originally when you asked me, I was like, I don't think I have anything coming up. And now I realize I have like six things coming up.
Yeah.
I need a better calendar. So that's everything I'm involved in right now.
There's like cons for everything, though.
There are. Oh, man.
I listened to Stern, and he they used to have Gary Garver do it. And those were really funny. And then I don't know, he quit doing it, and now they got this other guy doing it. But he just goes all these different conventions and interviews people and ask them, you know, dumb questions and just, you know, trying to get a reaction out of people. And he went to like a My Little Pony one.
Man,
he went to some like nudist one, and that was really weird.
Those two should be together.
Yeah. Then the nudist one, he was saying how like you know, you talk to like the, like even the janitor guy there and all this thing, you know, just whatever. And like, I was getting stories from all these people, and it was, man, it was,
wow,
it was interesting.
Oh, I bet. I don't want to be the janitor at a nudist convention.
Right. Yeah. It was,
not at all.
Man, it was, here you go. There was something he was saying about how like people like, you know, you're supposed to like carry around a towel or whatever to,
right,
for sitting on things, and
because it's polite.
Yeah, and like he was saying how like some people won't, and then they'll sit and there's like blood on it after they're. It's like, what, really? Like, I mean, why is like the nudist people always like the grossest people?
Oh, you know, man, like, I'm sure there are nudists who are not gross, but there's probably a lot more.
Right.
Yeah. Like, I mean, just look at society in general.
Yeah, just blood and shit on the stool. You know?
No, thanks.
Yeah.
We once had to do a convention with the zombie preparedness thing that was supposed to be a sci-fi convention, but it wasn't making enough money, and it was in Vegas, so we sent a few people out to it. And it ended up not making enough money as a sci-fi convention, so they added a fetish convention to it at the last minute. So all the people we sent out there were there, and they called me up, and they're like, so there are a bunch of naked porn stars running around this convention.
Yeah.
And I don't think there were supposed to be. It's like, nope, but they just added to it. So you never know what you're going to get. They'll always add in a professional wrestler to a sci-fi convention for no reason. It's whatever. It's science fiction, I guess, technically.
Yeah. Anywhere they can make a couple bucks.
Yeah, exactly. They get a crowd.
Man, I read something, speaking of that, like I saw like something with Ric Flair, one of those, and like he's got like a whole, like, you know, list of like you know what his prices are.
Oh yeah,
you know, like for an autograph it was $20 or whatever it was, and then like a good picture was $40, and for him to put the robe on was like $100 or something, and then for him to go like say woo or whatever was, you know, it was like, it was just funny like how everything had a price and stuff. So
that's how they make money, man.
Yeah.
Like they're not in demand any other way.
Right.
Like William Shatner, when he goes to, I used to go to Dragon Con a lot in Atlanta. When William Shatner shows up, he's got a price list.
Yeah.
Like, if you want just a regular picture, he'll sell you one. If you want a picture with him on your cell phone, it's one price.
Okay.
And this is all after you pay the $100 to actually get to be in the room with
him.
Like, it's not enough that you're just both at the same convention.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's how Bill Shatner makes money now.
Yeah.
Because he's not Kirk anymore.
Yeah. There was a good Star Wars one that they used to play. They played on repeats every now and then. Pops in there and, on Stern Show. But they were talking to this guy, and it was a lot of those, like, you know, Star Trek and Star Wars kind of things where they – it's always kind of like to prove how into it you are by how, like, the deep cut, you know, like the kind of the how obscure your character
right.
is that you're dressed up as or something, like, you know, and that kind of thing. And there was one, this guy, you know, he's in a mask, and he's, like, talking to him, and he's like you know, and then all you hear is like, I'm Darth Nihilus. And he's like, you know, who are you? And he's like, you know, so he's, because it was just so funny listening to this interview through this mask and stuff. And like, and they just kept, you know, getting him, trying to repeat himself, and they just getting angrier and stuff.
Right.
And like, it was, but yeah, I don't know. And
oh,
so,
Lord.
Yeah. So, yeah, you do you, are you going to dress up?
I do not. I don't cosplay.
Yeah.
I am one of the few friends I have who will not put on a costume.
Yeah.
And I totally admit it's because I'm a stick in the mud about it. I always joke that I'm going as myself, which means I'll be wearing cargo pants and a black t-shirt.
Yeah.
And that's what I do. It's my con costume.
Yeah.
Mostly, it's because I wore costumes for a couple years, and I find them to be aggravating and annoying to move around in and just deal with crowds. And somebody's going to spill something on you, or I'm going to be drinking beer and spill that on me. Like,
yeah.
It's just, it's a hassle. I appreciate everybody in a costume.
Sure.
Like, some of my friends are super creative, and they do things like shape leather for their costumes or do injection molding to make these cool plastic helmets and stuff that they do, and I think it's great.
Yeah.
I don't know. The closest I got to a costume is that I'll occasionally wear the photojournalist vest that John Goodman wears in The Big Lebowski.
Oh, yeah.
I'll wear that and a bandana and just say that's my character because you can't see this on this podcast, but I look a little like John Goodman
right.
in the not healthy days of Roseanne. But I can pull that off.
What's really weird is... long before you said that, that's where I was thinking of not
right,
your
right.
looks, but I was thinking if I was going to go to any of them, Lebowski Fest is one I would
oh,
love
yeah.
to go to, like
totally.
Because like I just they all dress up, you know, they all I just think that would be a ton of fun to go because I love that movie so much. And,
I had never watched it all the way through until this year.
Oh, really?
A friend of mine forced me to sit down and watch it like maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago. Because I kept saying how every time it's ever started, I've fallen asleep.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because I thought it was boring. It's just the movie never made me stay awake like whenever it was on. And afterwards, like, I kind of nonchalantly said, okay, that was good. And then, like, the more I thought about it, I was like, okay, I do like it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Lebowski Fest would be fun to go to.
Because
those costumes are clothes, too.
Sure.
Like, that's totally different.
Yeah. That's a bathrobe and a... And a white Russian.
It's not going to be like football pads with spikes coming out of it or something. And
right.
a lot of my friends are in a post-apocalyptic costume, so that's what they're wearing, like license plate vests as armor and carrying around banisters with nails sticking out of them.
Yeah.
It's like, that's a lot of work, man.
Man, Max.
But you did the John Goodman's look from that movie is just perfect.
Yeah,
it's just like, it's a vest, some aviator glasses, and a gun. There you go. You're done.
You're out of your element. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, man. I love him the whole time.
Yeah, that movie, it's fun. I mean, for me, it's like same thing with like Pulp Fiction and stuff. Like, it's just so many great dialogue lines, you know, like back and forth. And it's just like so well written.
Yeah, Pulp Fiction is probably one of my 3 or 4 favorite movies ever.
But just, I mean... Those movies, I can watch them over and over, and just those lines, and like, you know, just it's so classic and stuff. It's it takes some that's some great writing, and I wish I could do some of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you can. I mean, look at some of Tarantino's early scripts. Like the dialogue was there, but it wasn't what it's at. It's just doing it constantly and getting the feedback. That's how comedy is, man. You get up there, you're like, you watch people, you're like, I wish I could write those jokes, and it's like, no. Like, you just gotta, you write your jokes, you tell them, people laugh at parts, you cut out the parts they don't laugh, you write new parts, and you just keep the parts they laugh at constantly.
Right.
And then somebody will come see you for the first time, and they'll see people laugh at every single thing you say, and be like, I wish I could write jokes like that.
Yeah.
Not knowing all the grinding that went into it.
Sure.
I'm sure script writing works the same way. Except I bet Tarantino's problem is that when he finishes a script, it's 900 pages long, and he has to cut it down to something usable.
Make it some, yeah.
Oh, man.
Not a four-hour movie.
No, when I write dialogue heavy, too, because, I mean, I grew up reading Elmore Leonard and loving Tarantino movies and, like, all kinds of stuff like that.
Yeah.
And dialogue was always more important than anything else to me.
Sure.
So, like, when I would write plays, I would have, like, these huge tomes of dialogue for what was supposed to be a 20, 40-minute play and no stage direction. So it's just like two people standing there talking about all this cool stuff and never doing a thing. So I'd have to go back through and go, all right, well, how can I use this for anything?
Yeah.
Anything fun?
Right.
And it's like, so I totally can see how it's just probably just a matter of crafting it.
Yeah.
So you should do it.
Yeah.
Some friends and I wrote a screenplay, like, nothing's going to happen with it probably ever. But we wrote it last year, I think it was. And it was the most fun process in the world. Writing with people is also one of the most educational processes, too, because it teaches you, like, patience and, like, how to work with other people's style and your own. But writing the actual screenplay was amazingly cool. And then all we did with it afterwards is we had a table read with a bunch of friends, and that's worth it. So if you're into writing, man, I suggest it. Write a screenplay and then just get a bunch of friends together to sit around and read it and record the reading.
Yeah.
You know. Making an audio play.
To tie all of it together, I think I was listening to Robert Rodriguez on Nerdist.
Mm-hmm.
Could you catch that one?
No? I haven't listened to his episode.
I heard
a lot of interviews with him. So, yeah.
I mean, I think he's a brilliant filmmaker, and I love Nerdist, and so it was interesting to listen to all
I like Spy Kids.
Yeah.
Like, I really did. I think Spy Kids is one of the better adventures.
Yeah, we talked about it, like, how that was where Danny Trejo kind of got a start as Machete.
That's right.
And stuff. But he was telling the story about doing his first film, and then, like, how, like, he... the way he shot it all and all the work that went into it, and then, like, he went and told, like, or wrote a book or however, whatever. I forget exactly what he said, how he got it out there, but that's what influenced Kevin Smith. He said how, you know, Robert was talking about how he filmed in what he had available, you know, and he wrote the story around what he had. You know, he's like, all right, I had this, and this.
Right.
Let's write this movie. And he started working with, and then Kevin heard all that, and he's like, well, I have this gas station I work in. I'm going to write a movie around this gas station, and that led to Clerks. It's interesting to, you know, hear how all that comes about. And
I really want to know what was around Robert Rodriguez to where he came up with El Mariachi.
Yeah.
Like, did he just stand here with mariachis just shooting everybody around him?
I don't know where, you know, exactly what influenced, but that's what he act like.
That's great.
Where, you know, he worked within his parameters, what he had and stuff, instead of trying to, you know, write a movie like, okay, now we got to go get all this stuff. He worked within his budget, what he had and stuff. So that was...
you can't argue with the results, man.
Yeah.
Because those are some great movies.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, yeah.
I love all that, especially the two Tarantino and Robert did together with the Grindhouse, the Planet Terror, and...
Not Death Clock. That's the band from...
Man, I'm drawing a blank now.
Death Machine? No.
It's about... Oh, I
it's
know,
the car.
Yeah, I know the movie car.
I'm lost on it. Oh, yeah. Man. Well, I just had a little stroke.
We'll think of it here in a minute.
Somebody listening to it is going to be like, guys...
Yeah. I hate when I do that, when I pull up a reference and I talk about it, how much I love it, and then I can't think of the... Or something. I don't know.
Darn
it. It's not Death Race, because that was a Jason Statham movie.
Yes. That was a different movie.
Yeah. I don't know.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's not coming to me.
Here. IMDb.
That's what these phones are for, right? It's Planet Terror and Death Clutch? No. I'm trying to think of it before you find it. It's not going to happen.
Death Proof.
Death Proof.
There you go.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, Death Proof. We'll edit all that out, and nobody will know the difference.
Oh, yeah, those movies, Planet Terror and Death Proof. Yeah, yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right, man. Well, I love that feeling, though. Like, when you get the answer and your brain just stops.
Yeah,
it's like,
oh,
oh
right.
That's so relaxing.
But, yeah, there's also, I think Pete Holmes got a bit about how, like, we there's no satisfaction anymore, like, in any of that. Like, you know, you meet, like, hey, what was this? Oh, okay.
Right.
You know, like, before we had to go, like, research it, get a book, go to a library, mm-hmm. or, you know, whatever it is, and, you know, have to learn all this stuff just before you get to there. You know, but now you can, you know, ask Google what had happened, you know, and then
right.
you get it right away. But there's no sense of, you know.
That bit's why I don't instantly pull my phone out
right.
anymore. Because I have realized, like, there is something, like, you get a rush of endorphins when you think about it yourself. And it's like, oh.
Sure.
Like, you like that. But then you also feel like you're having a stroke the whole time.
Right.
Like, you gotta wonder if this is when I should call the ambulance or not.
Right.
So, yeah, that hurt. We don't like to use our brains, man. Don't ask me any phone numbers or anything like that, because I can't tell you.
Oh, yeah. All right, man. Well,
this was fun.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun, man. It was it was really cool getting to chat and get to know you a little better. And
cool beans.
So yeah, come out. Every Wednesday.
Every Wednesday at 10:30 at the Crow's Nest.
Yeah.
If you want to do comedy, sign up. It's in downtown Maplewood, right across the street from Shop and Save. It's a fun time.
Yeah.
And then October 16th at the Crack Fox.
Yeah.
Come out for Impolite Company.
Yeah.
Always fun. Don't come if you want to see family-friendly show.
Right.
Yeah. Other than that, come out.
I really thought this show, Impolite Company, was going to...
Right? We tell you.
Yeah.
Our poster actually has the words, offense guaranteed, right in it. So.
Hey, not many people can guarantee it, but...
That's right. I'm waiting for somebody to come up and call me on it.
Yeah. Like,
I wasn't offended by anything on this show.
I want my $5
back. $5 back. We're not giving their $5 back.
I'm going to go get me a foot loan. Yeah. All right, Chris. Thanks, buddy. Man,
thanks
this was
a lot, man.
Good time.
This is good. Bye.
Bye. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.